Good morning. Thank you for worshiping with us, man. It's just been a great morning. It's like I feel like I've needed this. It's been so cold and dreary. It was really just awesome first service when my family was here, seeing my kids sing out, and then after they went did the children's ministry, they came out just really really excited for their time, and it's good. I don't know about you, but this time of year really really gets to me. I mean, I've lived here for 10 years now, and it has not gone away. Yeah, so get outside. If you're not feeling right, like make sure you get some sun. That's not part of the sermon. That's like for free. But worship does your body good too as well, I think. Today we're going to continue our sermon series on the life of Jacob. We are going to be in Genesis chapter 26 and chapter 27. So go ahead and turn your Bibles to Genesis chapter 26. We're in a very famous scene in the life of Jacob today. It's the story where he steals Isaac's blessing from his brother Esau. This is one of those stories that our kids could probably tell us if we asked them to. But in these like famous stories that we've read many, many times, often these stories have something to teach us. And this one certainly is no different. Specifically, this passage talks a lot about blessing. What does it mean to be blessed by God? This is a phrase that we often use in Christian circles. You know, we say that we're blessed, or we might tag a social media post like hashtag blessed or something like that. What do we mean when we do that? What do we mean? What are we saying when we say that we're blessed? Well, usually we reserve it for when life is good, right? We're blessed when we get a raise, or we're blessed when our kid brings home a good report card, right? Or we're blessed when we get a clean bill of health. But what about the opposite of those things? What about when life is hard? Does that mean that we're not being blessed? You know, 2016 got a lot of grief from a lot of people, but honestly, it was a pretty good year for the Edwards family, but mostly because 2013 through 15 were so bad. 2013 we had a kid, which was awesome, but also introduced a new chapter in life, and then I decided to go back to school, which meant a lot of added stress in our household between those two things. Now, on top of that, earlier in the year, we had decided that she was going to cut her work schedule down to just one day a week, which meant a significant change in our income and introduced a lot of financial stress to our household. So we've got stress of new baby and not sleeping, going back to school, not as much money as before, and all of these things. And so it was great in 2016 to at least have the school behind us and to be sleeping through the night, every night. And so, we've really felt blessed by the Lord this past year. It's been like, man, life is good. Now, does that mean that we weren't blessed by the Lord in the years or leading up to that? Is that what that means? How do we know when we are experiencing the blessing of the Lord? Well, these are important questions, and these are things we're gonna tackle here in Genesis chapter 26. So I hope you had time to find it. We actually have a lot of text to cover today, and that's my own fault. I'm the one that's responsible for this series anyway, of splitting it up and deciding what we're tackling on what day. And so today I'm tackling both chapters 26 and 27. Which is like 81 verses, not like 81 verses, it's exactly 81 verses, which in comparison to last week only had 16 verses, so a lot more this week. But part of the issue is that, this is a series on Jacob, but chapter 26 is about Isaac. And so, in fact, if you did a sermon series that was just on the life of Isaac and you took out all the passages where Isaac is kind of a minor character in a story that's really about Abraham or really about Jacob, chapter 26 would be the extent of your sermon series on Isaac. It's just about Isaac. And yet, in the narrative of chapter 26, we learn a lot that's applicable to the life of Jacob. It fits into this story of Jacob and Esau that we saw in chapter 25 and we're going to see again in chapter 27. So all of that is to say, we're not going to spend a ton of time in chapter 26. We're going to go through it, some of it rather quickly, and some not at all. All right, but we are going to read the first five verses. So let's pick it up here in Genesis 26, starting in verse 1. It says, "Now there was a famine in the land, and this was besides the former famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Gerar to Abimelech, king of the Philistines. And the Lord appeared to him and said, 'Do not go down to Egypt. Dwell in this land, and I will be with you, and I will bless you. For to you and to your offspring I will give all these lands, and I will establish the oath that I swore to Abraham your father. I will multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven, and will give to your offspring all of these lands. And in your offspring all of the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws.'" Okay, well, we're going to stop there for a second. Now, in these first five verses, it kind of sets the scene for what we're going to see in the whole chapter, and that is that Isaac is starting to repeat some of the same things that happened to Abraham. The very beginning of chapter 26, it sounds a lot like chapter 12, where there was a famine and Abraham went down to Egypt. It's like the same exact thing happens to Isaac, and it even says in the text, now this isn't the same famine that happened to Abraham, this is a different famine. And God says to Isaac, don't go down to Egypt. And then in these first couple verses, God repeats to Isaac like all the same stuff that he said to Abraham previously. In verse 3, he says that he's going to give him the land, right? This is exactly what he had promised to Abraham. In verse 4, he says, I'm going to multiply your descendants. They're going to be like the sands on the shore and the stars in the sky. And then also in verse 3, he tells him that he's going to bless him, just like he did to Abraham. Now, this word blessing, we're like reintroduced to this concept of blessing, and that is going to be our word for the day. God says that he'll bless Isaac. Now, what does that mean? Well, the theological word book of the Old Testament defines it as to endue with power for success, prosperity, fecundity, or longevity. And that makes sense, right? That's typically what we think of when we think of blessing, all right? When God says that he's going to be with Isaac and he's going to bless him, that means he's going to endue him with power, power to succeed. In Isaac's case, it's especially financially. And then just as God is done saying that, the rest of chapter 26 is that blessing playing out in Isaac's life. All right, so let's pick it back up in verse 6. We're going to see some more interesting parallels between Isaac and Abraham, his dad. So verse 6, it says, "So Isaac settled in Gerar, and when the men of the place asked him about his wife, he said, 'She's my sister.' For he feared to say 'my wife,' thinking, 'Lest the men of the place shall kill me because of Rebekah, because she was attractive in appearance.' Now when he had been there a long time, Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked out the window and saw Isaac laughing with Rebekah, his wife. And so Abimelech called Isaac and said, 'Behold, she's your wife. How then could you say she's my sister?' And Isaac said to him, 'Because I thought lest I die because of her.' Abimelech said, 'What is this that you have done to us? One of the people might have easily lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt upon us.' So Abimelech warned all the people, saying, 'Whoever touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death.' And Isaac sowed in that land and reaped in the same year 100-fold. The Lord blessed him, and the man became rich and gained more and more until he became very wealthy. He had possessions of flocks and herds and many servants, so that the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped and filled with earth all of the wells that his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham his father. And Abimelech said to Isaac, 'Go away from us, for you are much mightier than we.'" Okay, so we're going to stop there. Now, for time's sake, we're not really going to dive too much into this passage. But as I read it, if it sounded familiar to you, if you're like, "I feel like we already talked about this passage once," that's because this same thing has happened. This is literally the third time in the book of Genesis that this story has played out. Abraham did this whole deal where he traveled to a foreign land and started telling people, "This is my sister," when really he was talking about his wife. Abraham did that twice, and now Isaac does it. And so the point of the passage and the reason that this event is included in this is to show how, you know, is to make this parallel between Isaac and Abraham. The text wants us to know that Isaac is playing out the same life as Abraham. He's inherited this blessing. We see Isaac become very wealthy and very powerful. He becomes so wealthy and powerful that the Philistines are like, you need to get out of here. We're nervous about you. You're too strong. So again, we're just seeing these parallels between Isaac and Abraham. Now, we're not going to read verses 17 through 33. It's really long, and it's this kind of strange story where Isaac is fighting over with the residents of Gerar about water rights, and they're fighting over these wells. And the main point of it is that same exact thing happened to Abraham in chapter 21. And so again, it's showing Abraham's story playing out again in Isaac's life. And in fact, God makes the point that he's blessing Isaac just like he's blessing Abraham. In verse 24, he says, I am the God of Abraham your father. Fear not, for I am with you and I will bless you and multiply your offspring for my servant Abraham's sake. All right. So if there was any question about whether or not God's promises to Abraham were going to be fulfilled in Isaac, all of those questions are kind of put to rest in verse 26. We see all of God's promises to bless Abraham and his family played out in Isaac in chapter 26. Now, like I said, the reason that we're talking about this chapter is because it sets the stage for chapter 27 when we're really talking about Jacob. Okay, we're going to return to the story of Jacob and Esau in chapter 27. Before we get there, I do want to read the last two verses of chapter 26 because they are important and they're going to preview something that we're going to see in the future. So let's pick it back up in verse 34 of chapter 26. We'll read the last two verses, and then we're just going to move right into 27. So 26:34, it says, now when Esau was 40 years old, he took Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, to be his wife, and Basemat, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and they made life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah. All right, so Esau, he marries these two Hittite women, and it says they made life bitter for his parents, Isaac and Rebekah. So keep that in mind. Now we're moving into chapter 27 here. We're continuing the story of Jacob and Esau. When Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called his older son Esau and he said to him, my son. And he answered, here I am. And he said, behold, I'm old and I don't know the day of my death. Now then, take your weapons, your quiver and your bow, and go out into the field and hunt game for me and prepare for me delicious food that I love and bring it to me so that I may eat and that my soul might bless you before I die. Okay, so now we've just had this whole chapter, chapter 26. We just had a whole chapter where it's talking about how God has blessed Isaac. And we've seen Isaac become very wealthy and powerful. And he's got all these flocks and herds and all of these things. And now it just fast forwards in the story. And now all of a sudden, Isaac is an old man and his vision is dim and he can't see anymore and he's not sure when he's going to die. And so he says to his son Esau, he's like, I want you to go out and I want you to hunt and find something and kill it and prepare this food that I love and serve it to me so that I can bless you before I die. And so because of chapter 26, it's obvious what the stakes are, right? Just as we saw God with Isaac, like we're seeing that Isaac is ready to transfer that over to Esau, and we kind of know what all of this means. Now remember, Isaac favors Esau over Jacob. Remember the last chapter we looked at said that. And why is that? Well, Isaac likes the food that Esau kills. Esau's a good hunter, and he kills stuff, he prepares food. Isaac likes to eat it. And so it's fitting that Isaac says, I want you to go out, I want you to kill an animal, I want you to cook it and serve it to me before I bless you. It's fitting that that's the arrangement they have because that's kind of the extent of their relationship. It's you kill stuff, I eat it. That's basically their relationship. That's not too bad, I guess, if you're on Isaac's end of it, right? Now, this must have been awesome news for Esau. You know, I think put yourself in Esau's shoes for a second here. And he's like, you know, I may have lost my birthright to Jacob, but the blessing, that's way more important, and I'm right about to get that. So Esau is like super excited about this is, you know, greatest day of his life up to this point. Unfortunately for Esau, his mom was listening in on this conversation. If you remember, she favors Jacob. So let's see. She has other plans for what's about to go down. So let's pick it back up in verse 5. Now, Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke this to his son Esau. And so when Esau went to the field to hunt for game and bring it, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "I heard your father speak to your brother Esau, bring me game and prepare it for me, prepare for me delicious food, that I may eat it and bless you before the Lord before I die. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice as I command you. Go to the flock and bring me two young goats, good young goats, so that I may prepare from them delicious food for your father, such as he loves. And you shall bring it to your father and eat, so that he may bless you before he dies." But Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "Behold, my brother Esau is a hairy man, and I am a smooth man. Perhaps my father will feel me, and I shall seem to be mocking him, and I will bring a curse upon myself and not a blessing." And his mother said to him, "Well, let your curse be on me, my son. Only obey my voice and go and bring them to me." All right. So Rebekah overhears this conversation between her husband Isaac and her son Esau. And she comes to Jacob and she's like, "All right, listen, we got to act fast. All right, your dad is right about to bless your brother. He's out there hunting for game. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go out to our flocks. I want you to get two goats. I want you to bring them here. I'll kill them. I'll prepare them. And, you know, your dad doesn't see too well. We're going to trick him into blessing you instead." All right? And Jacob immediately sees a problem in this plan. Now, we've read this enough times that I think, like, we forget how absurd this plan really is. Jacob sees through it, and he's like, "Mom, I don't know if you remember this, but, like, I'm really smooth, and my brother is red and hairy like Elmo. You know, what if he touches me? He's going to curse me instead of blessing me." Notice there that Jacob's concern is not with doing the right thing, right? He's not like, "Mom, that's not right," okay? He's like, "Mom, this isn't going to work," right? That's his concern, right? We learn a lot about Jacob there. But his mom's like, "Don't worry about that. If he curses you, I'll take it. Just do what you're told," right? And Jacob's like, "Okay, Mom," probably rolls his eyes a little bit as he does it. And he gets to work. And this is a crazy plan. But let's see if it works. Verse 14. So he went and he took them and he brought them to his mother. He's talking about goats here. And his mother prepared the delicious food such as his father loved. And then Rebekah took the best garments of Esau, her older son, which were with her in the house, and she put them on Jacob, her younger son. And the skins of the young goats she put on his hands and on the smooth parts of his neck. And she put the delicious food and the bread which she had prepared into the hands of her son Jacob. And so he went into to his father, and he said, "My father," and he said, "Here I am. Who are you, my son?" Uh-oh. You know, imagine how this must have been for Jacob, like hearing that. Like, it's like, oh, no, he knows something's not right here, okay, right? Verse 19, Jacob said to his father, "I am Esau, your firstborn. I've done as you told me. Now sit up and eat from my game, that your soul may bless me." But Isaac said to his son, "How is it that you found it so quickly, my son?" It's like, uh-oh, another hole in the plan here. I didn't think of that. You know, Jacob is probably just, you know, freaking out right now. He's like, "Oh, man, what do I do? I got to think of a lie and think one up quick." So, okay, verse 20, he continues. He's like, "Because the Lord your God granted me success." I want you to take a second to appreciate what he just said there, right? Appreciate that lie, all right? It's easy to read over that quickly. Like, Jacob is throwing God under the bus here. He's not only lying, he's bringing God into it. All right. Verse 21. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Please come near that I may feel you, my son, to know whether or not you are really my son Esau or not." All right, moment of truth here. So Jacob went near to Isaac, his father, who felt him and said, "Well, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau." And he did not recognize him because his hands were hairy like his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him and he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he answered, "I am." And then he said, "Bring it near to me that I may eat of my son's game and bless you." And so he brought it near to him and he ate and he brought him wine and he drank. I like that at the end that he's adding the wine there. He's like, just in case my dad is onto something, let's liquor him up here and there'll be no questions asked. Verse 26. I'm sorry. And then his father Isaac said to him, "Come near and kiss me, my son." And so he came near and he kissed him. And Isaac smelled the smell of his garments, and he blessed him and said, "See, the smell of my son is as the smell of the field that the Lord has blessed. May God give you of the dew of heaven and of the fatness of the earth and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be everyone who blesses you." Okay, we're going to stop there. The plan worked, all right? It's miraculous. I mean, it was kind of an absurd plan, but it worked. Jacob tricked his son Isaac into his father Isaac into blessing him instead of Esau. And notice in the blessing, it's kind of set off in my text, the poem there, the blessing that Isaac pronounces over his son. It's related to, you know, financial prosperity. It's honor. He's like, "May you be honored among the peoples. May your brothers serve you." So honored over his brother. And then finally, there's this whole idea that blessing those who bless you and curse those who curse you, just as God said to Abraham. It's everything that God said to Abraham, everything that Isaac inherited from Abraham, he's now passing on, he thinks, to Esau, but really to Jacob. Now, because we had a word from the Lord at the very beginning, before Jacob and Esau were even born, we had this word from the Lord that it was going to end up this way, that Jacob the younger son was going to inherit the blessing and the birthright and all of these things, and Esau was going to be left out. And we've known this is coming. Finally happens. How is Esau going to respond? Well, we're going to find out in verses 30 through 40. As soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, Jacob was scarcely gone from the presence of Isaac, his father, when Esau, his brother, came in from his hunting. Jacob got out just in time. I already lost my place. Okay, here we go. And he also prepared delicious food, and he brought it to his father. And he said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that you may bless me." And his father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" And he answered, "I'm your son, your firstborn, Esau." And Isaac trembled very violently and said, "Well, who was it then that hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate it all before you came, and I blessed him. And yes, he shall be blessed." And as soon as Esau heard the words of his father, he cried out with an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, "Bless me, even me also, my father." But he said, "Your brother came deceitfully, and he has taken away your blessing." And Esau said, "Is he rightly not named Jacob?" Remember, Jacob means deceiver. "For he has cheated me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, he has now taken away my blessing." And then he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" And Isaac answered and said to Esau, "Behold, I've made him lord over you, and all his brothers I've given to him for servants. And with grain and wine I have sustained him. What then can I do for you, my son?" And Esau said to his father, "Have you but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And then Isaac, his father, answered and said to him, "Behold, away from the fatness of the earth shall your dwelling be, and away from the dew of the heaven on high. By your sword you shall live, and you shall serve your brother. And when you grow restless, you shall break his yoke from your neck." Okay, so we'll stop there here. Esau comes in. He doesn't know what's just happened. He's just expecting he's going to roll on in. He's going to serve his dad some food, and he's going to get blessed. And he brings the food to Isaac, and Isaac's like, "Who are you?" And Esau's like, "It's me, Esau. You know, you're firstborn. You asked me to make this food. You're gonna bless me." And Isaac's like, "Who is that guy that I just blessed then?" You know, and indeed, he shall be blessed. And it doesn't take the two very long before they put the pieces together, and they're like, "Oh, it was Jacob, and he tricked me." Esau's like, "Well, no big deal. Surely you have another blessing like left over for me as well, right?" And Isaac's like, "No, there was just one. It's gone to Jacob, and Jacob is going to be blessed." And then it says that Esau began to weep. Now, this image of a grown man weeping over this lost blessing immediately makes us feel bad for him and maybe resent Jacob just a little bit. But while I do think disapproval of Jacob's behavior is appropriate, I do want us to be careful about feeling too bad for Esau, and we'll come back to that in just a minute as to why that's true. But Jacob steals Esau's blessing, and it's now done. We've known it's coming. It finally happens. Now, there's one thing left that we don't know what's going to happen. We know what's one thing that we know about Esau? Like, what is his reputation? He's very good at killing things. And so we're like, well, what's going to happen here? How is this story going to end? Well, let's look and see. We've got a couple more verses here. Verse 41. Now Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. And Esau said to himself, "The days of mourning for my father are approaching, and then I will kill my brother Jacob." But the words of Esau, her older son, were told to Rebekah. And so she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and she said to him, "Behold, your brother Esau comforts himself about you by planning to kill you. Now, therefore, my son, obey my voice. Arise, flee to Laban, my brother, in Haran, and stay with him a while until your brother's fury turns away." You know, until your brother's anger turns away from you and he forgets what you've done to him. "And then I'll send and I will bring you here from there. Why should I be bereft of both of you in one day?" And then Rebekah said to Isaac, "I loathe my life because of the Hittite women. If Jacob marries one of the Hittite women like these, one of the women of the land, what good will my life be to me?" All right, let's stop there. All right, so Rebekah, she gets wind of this plan that Esau is, he's gonna do the old Michael Corleone thing and like wait till dad has passed away and then, you know, off his brother. And so Rebekah hears that this is gonna happen and she says to Jacob, "Look, you need to skip town. Like, I'm gonna send you off to your uncle, my brother Laban, who lives far away, and we'll just say you're going there to find a wife, and you go there for a little bit, and your brother, man, he's you know how he is. Like, he just gets really angry. He'll get over this in a couple days, and then I'll send for you, and you'll come back, and everything will be okay." And she's like, why should I lose you both in one day? And what she's thinking of is, you know, she's anticipating that her husband's gonna die soon, and then her older son is gonna murder her youngest son, and then her oldest son will have to be brought to justice for that. And so she's gonna lose like all of the men in her life in one day. And she's like, why should that happen to me? Just go off. So she sends Jacob away. And you know, and she even says to her husband, like, "Hey, these women that our son married are driving me crazy. I almost wish I was dead because of this. Like, if Jacob does the same thing, I don't know if my life will be worth living. So let's send him off to, you know, my brother's house. He'll find a good woman there and life will be better." And so they send him off, and then this starts the next chapter of Jacob's life that Gary's going to pick up next week. But there's a lot for us to learn in this passage. Now, I chose to speak on blessing because that's like the theme that permeates all through chapter 26, all through chapter 27. There's just this talk of blessing. And I want us to consider the three guys in the passage, Isaac, Jacob, and Esau, and their relationship to this whole idea of God's blessing. First, start with Isaac. Isaac really did nothing to try to pursue this blessing or really to inherit it. God told us in chapter 17 of Genesis that Isaac was going to receive this blessing. He told it to Isaac's dad, Abraham. He said, the blessing is going to go through Isaac. So we've known all along that that was going to happen. And we see in chapter 26 that God fulfills his promise, and he reiterates that to Isaac. And it's interesting to note why God says he'll bless Isaac. He says, "I'm blessing you on account of my servant to Abraham and the promise that I made to him." In other words, God isn't like, you know, "Isaac, you're pretty awesome and I'm going to bless you." He says, "No, I promised Abraham I was going to do this and I'm true to my word. I'm going to bless you." It's an act of grace based on his covenant with Abraham. So that's Isaac. What about the boys? Well, first we have Esau. Now, Esau, he is very interested in a blessing. And it's tempting for us to read this scene where he finds out he's not going to get the blessing and he just starts to weep. It's tempting to read that scene as this tender moment between father and son where Esau's just really disappointed that, you know, things aren't right with him and his dad and things have fallen apart. But I don't think that that's the case. And the reason is that chapter 26 mentions the fact that he married these Hittite women that were just bitter into the life of his parents. And the reason that is mentioned, so you don't hear anything about Esau, and then all of a sudden there's this side note about, hey, by the way, Esau did this. The text is mentioning this because it wants to portray Esau, continue to portray him, as this slave to his base passions. Esau, he wants what he wants. He's going to do what he wants. He doesn't really care. He's out for himself. He doesn't care what his parents think. He's going to do what he wants. And so while Esau is heartbroken over this lost blessing, really what's upsetting to him is the lost prosperity. He's really just upset because now he's not going to get rich like he thought he was. Further, the mentioning of the wild game is also significant. You know, Isaac and Esau, they were really close, but their relationship was based on pretty much just food. It was the extent of it. I mean, the relationship was Esau killed the food, Isaac ate the food, right? It was a transaction. Push the button, get, you know, and then Isaac showed Esau favoritism. So push the button, get favoritism, get the reward. Feed your father, get favoritism. That was their relationship. And so Esau, he got used to that relationship. And so when it fell apart, he just couldn't handle it. He's like, wait a second, I'm pushing the button and I'm not getting the reward. I'm feeding my father and I'm not getting the blessing. And that was what was so upsetting to Esau. It wasn't this like tender moment between father and son. I mean, this is a pity party from a man child who just found out that he's not inheriting his father's fortune after all. Okay? So that's Esau. What about Jacob? Well, Jacob's not much better, all right? He's not really the hero of this story. His concern is not with doing the right thing. When mom puts forth this plan of like, hey, we're gonna trick your dad and steal your blessing from your brother, he doesn't step up and say, hey, mom, you know, that's not right. Instead, he's like, hey, that's not gonna work. We're gonna get caught. And yet, he comes out slightly ahead of Esau as far as the ethics are concerned, in the sense that he at least honored his mother, okay? Esau didn't really care about his parents. He's just going to do what he wanted to do. Jacob, even though it kind of makes him look like a mother boy, he's not awful. You know, he's not awful, but he's not really the hero. God blessed him despite himself, right? Despite what Jacob did. So what is the takeaway of this story? Was Jacob justified in stealing the blessing? Is that what the moral of the story is? Like, hey, you got to do what you got to do? No, obviously not. We know Jacob was destined to inherit this. We know that, you know, God has ways of making things happen. So we know that was never up for grabs. It was never a question of whether Esau was going to get this. I mean, it was always going to be Jacob. But by stealing the blessing, first of all, Jacob didn't disqualify himself for receiving the blessing. God still honored that. But he did cause himself some heartbreak. How he chose to go about getting the blessing really hurt him in the long run. First of all, he never sees his mom again. Rebecca comes up with this plan of like, hey, you're going to go off to my brother Laban's, look for a woman, and you're going to be gone a couple days. Esau's going to get over it, and we're going to call you back. Well, he's gone for at least 20 years. And by the time he comes back, it's not really clear what life looks like for him when he comes back, but he comes back to bury his dad. And so he may have gotten a couple years with Isaac there. It doesn't really say. But by that time he comes back, Rebecca has passed away. And so it's interesting that, remember, Rebecca's concern is she doesn't want to lose. She's like, why should I lose both of you on one day? She doesn't lose both of them, but she does lose her favorite son. She never sees him again. And then let's not also forget that this is the last straw between Jacob and Esau. I mean, the boys were fighting to this point, but now it's all out. For the rest of the story, Esau is just hell-bent on killing his brother. And so when Rebecca is like, hey, go away, and in a few days, Esau's not going to be mad anymore. Well, 20 years later, Esau's still mad. Okay, so she didn't quite understand him there. But we're left to wonder what would have happened if Jacob hadn't stolen this blessing. Like, what if he hadn't gone through with this plan? First off, we know he would have been blessed anyway, because God said that was going to happen. One way or another, it would have happened. But maybe Jacob would have been able to heal this rift between him and his brother. Maybe. He could have. Rebecca's concern is that Isaac is going to die, and then Esau is going to kill Jacob, and then Esau's going to be brought to justice. Really what happens is Isaac doesn't die. Like, he lives on for a long time after this. And Isaac actually lives to see, I think, a semi-reconciliation between Jacob and Esau. I think the three guys get in the same room together again at some point. But Rebecca never does see that day. Maybe that all could have been avoided. And so I think we have something to learn about the blessing and such from all three of these guys. From Esau, we learn that there is no formula for blessing. I think it's really easy for us to fall into that trap with God. Like, we think that God blesses the people who do the right things, right? So we think, well, man, if I just pray enough, if I just do the right things, if I pray enough, or if I read my Bible enough, or if I avoid sin, if I give enough or something, if I push the right button, I'll get God's blessing. Well, that's not how God works, okay? And that's worth repeating. That is not how God works. And the problem that we have with operating like this is it sets us up to have this same kind of relationship with God that Esau had with Isaac. I push the button, God gives me the blessing. But when we push the button and the blessing doesn't come, or worse yet, suffering comes, it's easy for us to become resentful, right? What's the deal, God? I'm pushing the button, where's my blessing? Why am I having financial struggles? Why is my family hurting like this? Why isn't life working out the way I thought it would? So if you're here today and you're suffering, it is not necessarily because you are doing something wrong. It could be that you are doing exactly what you should be doing. Sometimes God calls us to do hard things. And sometimes those hard things include an element of suffering. And it doesn't mean that we're outside of the blessing of God or that we're on the wrong track. At the beginning of this message, I mentioned all of the things that we had changed in 2013. One of them involved, Brooke substantially cutting back her hours at work, which meant a significant financial hit for us. And this was very, very stressful for us. We weren't sure how we were going to make it work. And it would have been easy for us to look at the books, right, and say, clearly God is not blessing this decision. But shortly after that, I mean, it was less than a year after that, we had issues with school, and we decided that it was best for us to bring our kids home and homeschool them. And I talk about this a lot because it's a significant part of my story. It's certainly not the best case for everyone, but for us, it clearly was. And that wouldn't have been an option. It wouldn't have been an option at all under Brooke's former schedule. And so now, like, when we take inventory of our life and we're like, what things are going well in life and what things are not, what's going on with our kids is one of the things that's going great, right? We're like, clearly, this is working. It's been awesome to see how our kids have come alive through that decision. But it was a hard one, and it was one that required a lot of sacrifice. Now, sometimes I think that we fall into this thinking that if we do the right thing, that God will take away all of our hardship. It reminds me of just a lot of the stories that I continue to tell my kids, but ones that I heard when I was a kid that are like, a young kid finds a wallet or something on the ground, and they're facing this moral dilemma of, do I take the money or do I do the right thing and turn it in? And they decide to do the right thing and turn it in. And then, the owner of the wallet's like, well, really, I just needed my ID and the credit cards. And because you did the right thing, I'm going to let you keep the money anyway. Okay? And we get into the mindset that that's how life works. And that's how God works. That if we just do the right thing, that God's going to reward us. Right? So if God has called us to, like in our case, for Brooke to cut back her hours, and we made that sacrifice that God was somehow going to reward us financially for doing that, and that we would have more than we had before just because we were obedient. But no, that's not how God works. Sometimes God calls you to do hard things. And sometimes those hard things are painful. But they're always worth it. They're always worth it. And this is an instance where where doing what God has called us to do has been hard, but certainly worth it. Certainly worth it. So from Esau, we learned that there's no magic formula for blessing. That's just not how God works. Now from Jacob, we learned that just because if we are experiencing God's blessing and we are prospering, that doesn't necessarily mean that we're doing the right thing. Okay, God blessed Jacob despite his behavior, not because of it. I think sometimes we fall into the trap of thinking just because life is good for us, that that means that God approves of what we're doing. And this isn't always the case. You know, just like sometimes the righteous suffer, sometimes the wicked prosper. The danger of falsely associating worldly success with God's blessing is that it can give us this sense of invincibility, right? Or a sense of independence from God. And you hear, you know, people or organizations, sometimes even churches, say things like, well, of course God is blessing us. Look at all the success we're having. Sometimes those are famous last words. Like, it's like right before things fall apart that statements like that are made. So when things are going well, we need to maintain this posture of gratefulness, that the good things that we have are a blessing from God, and that we need to thank him for that. If God is blessing us, it's not because of our worthiness. It's because of his faithfulness, because of his faithfulness. Sometimes God blesses us despite ourselves, not because of it. So we need to thank him for that. So from Esau, we learned there's no magic formula for blessing. From Jacob, we learned that sometimes God blesses us despite ourselves, not because of it. And then finally, we have Isaac. And from Isaac, we learn, and this is the most important lesson, that God is faithful. Right? God is faithful. He does what he'll say he'll do. And this, the reason why this is the most important thing is because Jesus had a lot of shocking and important things to say about God's blessing and what that looked like. In the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 3 through 12, he says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Now, when we read this, we do have to be careful about how we read the words of Jesus, right? The poor in spirit are blessed not because they're poor in spirit, right? They're blessed because God is gracious and he will give them his kingdom despite the fact that they look poor in spirit in the here and now. In other words, he's saying looks can be deceiving. In the same way, those who mourn are not blessed because they mourn. They're blessed because God is gracious and because he has promised to comfort them despite the fact that they're mourning now. In other words, looks can be deceiving. Finally, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, they're not blessed because they hunger and thirst for righteousness. They're blessed because God is gracious and he has promised to satisfy that hunger for righteousness, even if that hunger goes unsatisfied in the here and now. Again, its looks can be deceiving. So in other words, despite what life looks like now, we have hope for the future. God has promised us that he will redeem the world, that he will make things right, and we can trust that. So some of you here today have a lot of things going on really well. Things are just going really well for you in life. Man, rejoice in that and be glad and celebrate God's blessing. That's not something that you need to be like self-conscious of. It's not something you need to feel bad about. It is something that we should recognize it is what it is. It's God's blessing and not because of anything awesome that we did, but just because God is gracious. But, you know, if God's blessing you, rejoice in that. But some of you are going through hard times right now, and I want you to know that this doesn't necessarily mean that you're on the wrong path. It could mean that, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. We don't do the right things because they result in God's blessing. We do the right things because they're the right things and because we've been called to do them. Let's pray. Father, we do recognize you right now as the source of all blessing. And we recognize Jesus and his death on the cross for sins and his resurrection from the dead as the basis of our blessing, that we are blessed because we're blessed in him. You know, Father, even though sin and death have been defeated, they still rage against you. And I know many here today maybe struggle to see how they're blessed in Christ because of the hardships that they're going through. Father, I just pray that you would encourage them right now, that you would remind them of your faithfulness and your love for them, that you would just speak a word of strength to them, that they would persevere despite maybe the hard things that they've been called to. At the same time, I'm reminded that sometimes we do bring hardship on ourselves. And if that's the case, that you would speak that to us and say, hey, you know, I'm trying to get your attention with this. Stop it. We do, Lord, just affirm your goodness to us. And right now, as we take the bread and the cup, we remember Jesus, and we just ask that you would be glorified through everything we say and do. We just pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.